This is Fresh Air. I'm David Bean Cooley, in for Terry Gross. We're continuing our salute to NYPD Blue, which leaves the air next week after 12 years on ABC. Here's a scene from the second season of the show. Bobby Simone, played by Jimmy Smits, and Andy Sipowicz, played by Dennis Franz, are questioning a man who had his wallet and his pants stolen. It fit into a case involving men with prostitutes who were held up by pimps. Only this guy insisted he wasn't with a prostitute.
I mentioned to Mr. White this pattern we've been working on where the prostitute gets into the car and points the John to some romantic parking lot off of South Street, and then a hard-working pimp shows up and sticks a gun in his face. How we got two detectives on the street right now trying to put a stop to this before somebody gets shot. But he can't help us with that because this case is unrelated. This is a whole separate phenomenon here because there's no prostitute involved, right, Mr. White?
I told you what happened.
Mr. White told me what happened. So he can't be of help on this pattern that we've been working on where we got these two cops out on the street busting their ass. I'm feeling kind of bad now because I thought Mr. White might be lying.
Well, maybe being in a strange police station, he just can't remember right. Maybe needs more familiar surroundings.
Could that be, Mr. White?
Try taking him over to his house and talking it out with his wife in the room and see if maybe that might jog his memory.
Wait.
No. I think we should do that.
All right.
Bill Clark is a retired New York detective who advised and is now an executive producer of NYPD Blue. Clark's famous real-life investigations included the Sum of Sam and the Zodiac murders. Terry spoke with Bill Clark in 1995 in a conversation joined by series co-creator David Milch.
On NYPD Blue, when the cops are interrogating a suspect, they try to convince the suspect that the suspect doesn't want to have a lawyer, at least not yet. Why do the cops want to make sure on NYPD Blue that the suspect doesn't have a lawyer until they're done talking?
Yeah, I think people seem to think that the lawyer just comes in to kind of referee the interrogation so that nobody lays a hand on him and he's not intimidated. Well, the reality is if an attorney enters the room, if he allows the suspect to confess, he is then going to be sued for malpractice. So he is not going to allow him to answer any of your questions. So effectively, the interrogation is shut down the minute that he calls for an attorney. So we work very hard to keep him out of there so that we don't shut down what in most cases is the single biggest piece of evidence against the guy, which is a confession.
Now, on the show, the cops are always trying to make it seem like it's going to be a better deal for the suspect if he talks to the cops before the lawyer comes.
Yeah, that's the biggest lie we ever tell. I mean, it's most times.
You suspects out there, Bill doesn't mean it.
Yeah. Most times when a guy sits into that interview room, if he doesn't confess, then a great deal of time he'll wind up either walking back out a free man or it'll be at trial a big piece of evidence against him if he does. I'll give you an example of something. It's not my favorite subject, but the O.J. Simpson case. I think one of the mistakes that was made in that case was there was so much evidence against O.J. Simpson, physical evidence. I've never seen so much circumstantial evidence in any case, that rather than get the confession, they did a brief 30-minute interview with him and let him go. Now, with all of the so-called inconsistencies and mishandling and anything else that was brought out in trial, if there had been a confession from O.J. Simpson, he would have been convicted. There was no way that the jury could have looked past that. And that's the lesson that a detective learns very early in his career is with a confession, it's easier for you on the stand because they're not going to beat you up as hard because they know there's a confession that they've got to deal with. And to me, that's the single biggest thing I've always worked for.
So what are some of the things that a cop might tell a suspect to get the suspect to not make that phone call to the lawyer?
Well, one of the things is you tell a guy, listen, you know, you're the guy that's going to do the time, not the attorney. He's looking to come in here for money. He doesn't care about your welfare. You know, this is the time to make the deal. It's going to help you. You can explain why you did it, the motives behind it. You know, we know you didn't mean this. It was an accident type thing. And, you know, something had to drive you to commit this act. I had a case very similar to the Simpson case a week or two before that. And a man and woman stabbed brutally. The woman was stabbed about 30 times, the man about 60. Trail of blood leaving the scene. I had the guy in about 3 days later. excuse me, and I told him, I says, listen, you know, this is a vicious crime here, and this is horrible. I says, you don't, something had to push you over the edge to do this. You don't want to go in as a crazy man, or just a vicious murderer. Something had to do it. And he explained it away that it was a jealousy thing, and he lost control. He had done a few years in jail, and he realized when he cut the first guy that he had blew it and he was going to go back, and he just lost control, and he just stabbed out of frustration.
Bill, would you ever make promises to suspects that you couldn't really keep in order to help get a confession?
Well, legally, you can't make promises that you can't keep. You can lie to him about things, but, you know, as far as time served and stuff like, you know, time that he would do in jail and stuff like that, you can't do. But as far as evidence that I have against him, that I have co-defendants that have flipped and stuff like that, I've lied many, many times.
That's legal. You have to understand that the legal test is you may mislead a suspect so long as the way you mislead him would not make an innocent man confess. In other words, you can't say, I have your wife in the next room, and unless you confess, I'm going to beat her, because then an innocent man might confess. But you are able to say your running mates have confessed. You are able to say, you know, we've got evidence from the scene. We recovered the gun. Because an innocent man would know that wasn't true.
Bill, you retired from the New York City police as from your job as a detective during the second season of NYPD Blue. While you were still working as a detective and consulting with the series, was there a new degree of, well, almost self-consciousness that entered your work? Would you be reporting on a case and in the back of your mind see it as an episode?
No, I mean, I did my job as I saw it. I never really thought if a case went down while I was doing it that this would be a good episode. No,
Billy is not someone who is comfortable with that kind of irony or distance when he's working as a detective. He takes that very, very seriously. And I know from speaking with him about cases that he was working on all during the period when he was still an active detective if you're a good detective, so much of that coincides with being a good storyteller, because what you're trying to do is sort of extrapolate a whole world or a whole personality from pieces of information. And so when Billy would talk about the cases he was working on, he didn't really need to rephrase for my purposes, because just Billy being Billy, and the way I think I say in the book, you know, when Billy would work on cases, you'd watch him get sick over the cases. They would just occupy his whole being, and when a case wasn't going well, he would be miserable and you couldn't talk to him, and so he was like the most beautiful sort of prism for both the case and for a cop reacting to the case.
David Milch and Bill Clark speaking with Terry Gross in 1995. NYPD Blue ends next week after a 12-year run on ABC.